This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
Asia Pacific Currents.
News and labour issues from the Asia Pacific region.
We strongly condemn the police that arrest the protesters.
Saturday mornings at 9 o'clock.
On Community Radio 3CR.
Workers of the world should unite to fight this greedy capitalist.
Brought to you by Australia-Asia Worker Links. Good morning and welcome to Asia Pacific Currents this Saturday, the 14th of May, here on Community Radio 3CR. I'm Giselle Hannah.
And I'm Pierre Morrow, and I'm back from a little jaunt to a very important
yes.
conference,
tell,
wasn't it?
Tell the listener, you might as well have called it a junket.
I see, listeners, that regular listeners would know that the level of
abuse that you're subjected to.
That's
of course,
correct.
That's right.
But
I forgot.
Seriously, comrades, my name is Pierre, and we will bring you next week's program. Will be an a rundown of the Labour Start conference that I did attend last weekend. So,
in all seriousness, that's right. Pierre did attend Labour Start in Canada. Most of you, many of you, might in fact get your daily news from the Labour Start website. We did present our Global Picket Line workshop at that particular conference. So many of you will know that that's a cornerstone piece of work that we're doing across the region at the moment.
And, of course, on today's program, you'll hear all the latest updates of a number of labour struggles and issues around the Asia-Pacific region. If you want to know more about more information, you can go to our website www.aawl.org.au or our Facebook or Twitter accounts. And the main interview today, Giselle?
Our feature story this morning, I had the opportunity to speak with Arnel from the Labour Party of the Philippines about that massive industrial action that we've been reporting on in the Cavite Export Processing Zone. And this concerns a factory, Sonyong Technology, where last week we reported that the workers occupied the factory. So we'll let you know where that struggle is at in the second part of the show.
All right, that sounds very interesting. So we'll go straight to the news items. Well, the first news item is actually from the Philippines, a bit of a sad one. It's the first year anniversary of the Cantex factory fire, where just over a year ago, 72 workers burnt to death in the Cantex factory. They were making flip-flops or thongs. That's correct. The now the Kilosung Mayo Union, the KMU, who's the union who represents the workers and their families, has said that 1 year after this factory fire, justice remains elusive for the victims' family and survivors, with government policies regarding contractualization and workplace safety remaining the same as they were before. The leader, the chairperson of the KMU, Elmer Kabong Labog, said the country's justice system and the government make it very clear that they consider workers' lives very cheap. Justice for the victims and survivors is being denied, and lessons from the tragedy remain unheeded. So obviously the fight for justice continues, and criminal charges against the owners are still to go through the courts in the Philippines.
And actually that figure of 72 is a bit of a misnomer, because the authorities just stopped counting at 72. They decided too many bodies, we don't want to keep counting. So outrageous. There were probably hundreds of workers and children that died in that factory. Moving now to Australia, around 50 workers employed at the Bitsa cooling equipment plant in the west of Melbourne, Australia, are now on their sixth week of their indefinite strike. They've taken action to resist the company's attempts to reduce leave days, reduce redundancy payouts, and introduce differing rates of pay for workers doing the same job. This strike has important ramifications for other workers in similar manufacturing companies as employers try to make workers pay for the ongoing capitalist crisis.
And people can go on the AMW website to see the address of that factory and go and drop in and say hello to those workers. So all the best to you, comrades. We go to Pakistan now, where just very recently there was the murder of Khurram Zaki by armed men in Karachi. Khurram Zaki was a human rights activist. Khurram Zaki was killed in Karachi by unknown assailants in an attack that also left a journalist dead and a bystander critically injured. The Awami Workers Party has condemned the assassination of right activists like Khurram Zaki, and says this is part of a overall attack on progressives in Pakistan. The Awami Workers Party goes on to say in their statement that it's a travesty of justice that the police and security authorities continue to turn a blind eye to the rampant violence of right-wing militant groups. The forces of fascism in Pakistan, state and society will continue to violently repress and silence progressives, ethnic and religious minorities, working classes and women in Pakistan. We need to organise ourselves into a mass political force. The AWP goes on to say that that we, in a collective sense, the left, has to evolve our politics beyond just speaking out and actively rebuild progressive institutions of organised collective action across Pakistan to face the ongoing onslaught of the forces of fascism in Pakistan.
Moving now to Cambodia, earlier this week, 8 human rights activists were arrested by police in Phnom Penh. All 8 of them were attempting to join a demonstration that had been organised to protest against earlier arrests of human rights activists. These latest arrests continue the government crackdown on dissent and an ability of activists to protest. Just last month, the Cambodian government passed new laws to severely restrict the rights of workers to organise and take action.
Yes, very important there to follow what's happening. On our last news item, we go to Iran, where we've got slightly good news. I made bad news or very sad news. Mahmoud Beheshi Langroudi, the spokesperson of the Iranian Teachers Trade Association, who was on hunger strike for the last 3 weeks, was actually released from prison, temporarily released from prison, last week, due to the fact that his health was seriously deteriorating, so now he's in hospital. At the same time, Ismail Abdi, also from the teachers' union, and Jafar Azimzadeh, who is the chair of the Free Union of Iranian Workers, have also been on hunger strike since the end of April, and they're still in jail. The as listeners would know, the teachers in Iran have been incredibly active throughout 2015 and this year, but they've faced terrible repression. So what we are seeing now is that the Islamic Republic government is actually imposing lengthy prison sentences on teachers and other activists to actually crush the a new working class movement in Iran. So we'll certainly provide more information in the next couple of days on our website, and also how to take solidarity action and write to these workers and to the government of Iran.
That is the news from around the region. Just before we go into some community announcements and then our feature story for the week, a big thank you to everybody who attended last night's AAWL fundraiser, where we screened The Act of Killing. It was a very successful evening. We made $440, so very big thank you to everybody who participated. There will be more video screenings in the coming week, so do stay tuned for the details of that, and please come along to support us and to support the work that we do across Asia.
And if I can just add, I just think the film itself was incredibly... fascinating to say, although incredibly sad at the same time. So,
if you do get a chance to see The Act of Killing, please do.
All right, we'll go to a couple of community announcements. Now we'll be back with our main interview about the strike in the Cavite export processing zone in the Philippines.
Three CR, always bringing you the latest union news.
They're coming after us at the moment. They want to get rid of penalty rates, the big push from businesses. They want to get rid of all the things that you and I have fought for.
So there's tens of thousands of jobs gone, contracted out to sham contracting arrangements.
On 8.55 a.m. and on the web, 3cr.org.au.
It's 10 minutes past 9 o'clock here on Community Radio 3CR. We brought you some stories over the last couple of weeks about some striking Filipino workers that have been employed by SsangYong Technology Industries. This is a Korean factory in the Cavite Export Processing Zone, which is the biggest export processing zone in the Philippines. They went on an indefinite strike in the middle of April, and the dispute culminated in those workers occupying the factory last week. I spoke with Arnel. He is a union organiser with the Labour Party of the Philippines. Starts off by talking a little bit about what SsangYong Technology, or CITIC as the acronym is, about what that company manufactures, and then we talk a little bit about the dispute and how everything unfolded.
Yeah, they're part of the electronics industry supply chain. They actually make plastic products that are used for storage and shipping of semiconductor parts.
What was the dispute about?
The dispute at SYTIC or SYTIC or SsangYong, that's how they pronounce the name, involves the issue of the right to unionize or freedom of association and also violations of labor standards. So the workers at SYTIC were not being paid the right wages, or part of the wages were not paid in cash but in kind, in the form of meals. They were not paid overtime because of an illegal compressed work week schedule. And then there were issues of occupational health and safety. And because of in order to redress those issues, they formed a union. And then when management learned of that, workers were terminated and harassed. And so that's how the dispute started and escalated.
And of course, the workers were eventually locked out of the factory and management brought in scab labor.
Yes. At at the second round of the struggle, the factory shut down and then the workers were locked out of work. But they, in response, they occupied their factory for for around 24 hours in order to force negotiations and a resolution of the dispute.
Before we look at the factory occupation and the outcome and the lessons, I wanted to get a sense of the export processing zone and the conditions and the laws in general in those areas, because countries don't set up export processing zones if they can't provide enough incentive for the capitalists with some kind of suspension of the labour laws of the country.
Yeah. The export processing zone in Cavite is actually the biggest one in the Philippines. It is managed by the state, by the government. So it's unlike most other export zones, the majority of which now are privately built and managed. So there are around 60,000 workers in the Cavite Export Processing Zone, or for short, they call it the Cavite EPSA. Okay. And while, of course, by law, all labor laws and standards must be followed within the Export Processing Zone, but it is a fact that many violations do happen, and then labor unions are discouraged or suppressed as a way of guaranteeing the operations and profitability of the companies that are locating within the export zones.
So would it be the case that the mere fact that these workers were able to set up a union is in itself some kind of victory because of how widely unions are discouraged in this area?
Yeah, yeah. The formation of the union at CITIC is just a few of the attempts to form unions within specifically the Cavite export zones. Many earlier attempts have been foiled, although because it has been there for quite a while, more than 10 years or so.
So this issue was about wages and conditions. And when we say conditions, I think we're talking about contractualisation versus non-contractualisation. And then occupational health and safety issues. So that's what the dispute was fought over. And then the workers have occupied the factory for a period of time. What happened next?
Well, immediately after the Labor Department learned of the occupation, the workers forced themselves inside the factory. Around the morning, they were actually on their second day or third day of the lockout then. So when the Export Zone Administration and later the Labor Department learned of the direct action of the workers, they first sent what's called the local PES, EPSA police, and then somebody from the Labor Relations Department or the Anti-Union Department of the Export Zone Authority to talk to the workers. They left immediately without doing anything to the workers. And then formal negotiations started later when there was a representative from the Export Zone Authority and then the Labor Department. It was a marathon negotiations that went on almost the whole day. And one, the workers were denied, the workers requested for a council for somebody to assist them in the negotiations, and that was denied. So the negotiations went on just between the workers and the representatives of those two government agencies inside the factory. And then second, the workers were like double teamed by the representatives from the Export Zone Authority and the Labor Department. They alternately threatened the workers with cases for occupying the factory. And they, while they were extending an offer, an improved offer of separation pay and additional claims for the unpaid overtime. After hours of negotiations, they finally wore down the workers, and the workers accepted the offer of separation, after which they left the factory.
So was there a union representative or anybody like that to support and defend the workers, or were they literally negotiating just on their own?
No, they were on their own. The workers requested for assistance, but that assistance was denied. So nobody else was allowed to enter the factory to be able to assist the workers in the negotiations.
So they were basically ambushed, and with not a lot of experience at the time of this particular dispute, they basically responded to the pressure.
Yes, that is what happened. The workers who formed the unit were... this process started maybe a month ago when they sought the help of union organizers from the Labor Party or Partido ng Manggagawa. So they did not go through like a long process of seminars or education. So they knew very little about the labor laws and all this process. So everything was along the way when they had to strike the first time around, they they were canceled just days before they had to launch the strike. So everything was on the go. So especially in the negotiations, when they were being threatened with with cases for the occupation, of course they were sort of afraid. Even though, well, before we were telling them that this is a labor dispute and you could not be arrested without any violence occurring, and that the police could not be intervened without any violence occurring in the picket line or during the occupation.
I think there are some very important victories to remember in this dispute, even though ultimately the workers probably walked away with less than what they were asking for. And one of them, I think, sounds like that these workers have become politicized in the process of this dispute.
Yes, that is true. So when we first met these workers, they were, of course, started just with being angry at management for the abuses and for the violations that have happened. They knew very little about the relations between the capitalists and workers. They were actually, they actually had the illusion that their enemy was just the manager, not the employer or capitalist himself. They knew like little about the relations between the labor department, the Ecozone, the export zone administration, the government itself, with regards to labor rights, and especially their own power to be able, their own the power of the workers to force management to concede to their demands. They were actually thinking of first bringing their issues to a there's a television program here where you could report abuses, and they will like publicize it, and in that way government officials will act on those complaints by people. So we're thinking maybe that's the way to do it, instead of acting on their own and then all the basis of their unity and action winning victories. In the process, they did learn a lot. Although, of course, up until the end, we first knew that they had doubts. They doubted their own power. They doubted their own capacity to win. And so they finally, agreed to a settlement that was less than what they could have achieved if they continued on fighting.
And do you think that now that they've got the experience of this dispute, that they have an appetite for more disputes and to support and educate other workers based on their new experience?
Yes, I think specifically for the workers of SITIC or Songyun, well, after they agreed to the deal or agreement, we were surprised that they met us as a group, and then they, of course, explained what had happened and ultimately why they agreed. And then we told them, of course, we understood their situation. Most disputes actually end up with workers accepting separation pay. It doesn't cost much for the capitalists, and the workers get something, and then they move on with their lives. But they expressed the point that they wanted to continue as a group, so they continued. They wanted to continue communicating with PM, so they could continue as a group. Okay, so whatever happens, if they do get reemployed as promised, although we doubt that, or they move on and work in other factories, they will continue to maintain their group. And so that's like the terms of engagement we now have with them. And from the very start, we told them that we want to win this dispute, and it's not just because it's what's right for you, but by winning victories, we can inspire other workers within the export zone authority to fight. And that's the only way to change the conditions at the export zone. It's by workers uniting and fighting and then winning on victories until we've changed a whole lot of the what presently exists at the export zone.
Well, I think it's important to report on some of our losses as well as the victories. And even though I think technically we would call this one a loss, although some demands were met, I think there were many lessons and future prospects that we can get from this dispute.
Yes, I think so too. Specifically for the SITIC workers, they held out for the first strike for 5 days. That's, I think, much longer than any other previous strikes at the export zone. Second, they like march around the export zone together with two other unions within the export zone to knock on the other factories and leaflet and talk to the workers who were on their way home after work. So, and then finally, of course, for the first time within specifically the export zone in Cavite, they occupy the factory. Okay? So all those experiences, I'm sure, will not be lost. And the next big dispute or fight within the export zone in Cavite will build upon those experiences.
Arnel, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you too, Giselle.
This is David Rovics, and you are tuned to 3CR, 8:55 a.m., Melbourne, Australia. Step three is finding there's a tactic when everyone believes it could be true. That if all the people work collectively, there just might be something we can do, and everything can change.
27 minutes past 9 o'clock here on Community Radio 3CR. You're listening to Asia Pacific Currents. Just in the closing minutes of the program, I want to plug the Moreland anti-racism demonstration, which is coming up on Saturday the 28th of May. That's 11 o'clock. It's kicking off at the Coburg Library, which is off Sydney Road. It won't be hard to find. 11 o'clock on Saturday the 28th of May, a really, really important event to get to. And we understand that there is some challenge to that event. So, and when I say a challenge, I mean by far right-wing forces, fascist forces, and particularly the True Blue Crew and some other UPFers that we've been working against. They're outright fascist, Islamophobes, racists. So get along to that rally to defend our space, to defend our right to fight against racism.
And can I just add about that rally? The good thing about there's many good things about that rally, but also that it actually puts together the three main racism strands in Australian history and Australian culture, i.e., against Aboriginal people, against refugees, and against Muslim people. So it really brings the three strands together, which I think is very good. I don't think you back announced the interview.
Oh, I thought it was clear. I spoke with Arnel, who's from the Labor Party of the Philippines, and we were talking about the recent struggle at the Cavite export processing zone in the Philippines.
Maybe I was just zoning out, and maybe listeners can think, oh, well, Pierre's was just getting old.
Over the hill, we know that, listeners.
That's right.
Coming up next is Palestine Remembered. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next Saturday from 9 o'clock with more news and current affairs from the Asia-Pacific region. I'm Giselle Hannah.
And I'm Pierre Mora, and we'll see you next week. Have a great weekend.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.